I'm on vacation without my microphone, so this intro sounds awful. This week, we talk about The Last of Us, State of Decay, and why or why not to play AAA games. Welcome to the 27th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And this is The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. And this week we are not talking about cancer. Thank you for
PTSD.
Yes, either of those things.
We cover all the happiest of games.
Yes, we do. Yeah, no, but thank you for if you listened last week for the first time and you've stuck around, thank you so much. It is a decidedly different tone most of the time. In that we will make light of cancer in our intro, but not make light of it. But you know, whatever. To use that as a punchline for laughs, guys. Cricket.
I'm actually judging you right now.
I always am judging you.
Yeah, it doesn't even register for me anymore. It's just it's the default state. Yeah, but we talk about games and shit. Normally, we do like a little video game news segment, but we are, I think we've decided via majority that nothing happened this week, so we're going to skip right over the brief and into
the grind.
That's where you're going to play the grind sound.
Yeah.
wait, what?
See, Ben got it. He got it because we're entering the grind, which is a segment where we talk about the games that we have been playing. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
Cricket.
Boldly steps forward to fight the crickets. Oh, man. Okay, David went first.
Oh, well, I fear no cricket.
What about that little cricket gun from Men in Black? See, it was so small, but then it ended up being really, really strong. It kicked like a mule.
He was jealous of
Tommy Lee Jones's gun because it looked like a big, you know. I don't know. Just watch the movie. It's okay.
The level. I'm not sure what just happened.
Tell me what you've been playing, David.
Couple of things. Probably the biggest one. I succumbed to Dennis's dark influence and signed up for PlayStation Plus.
Woohoo!
As you do.
It's pretty damn spiffy. I'm really, really liking it. I didn't realize how it worked before, that you pretty much just, you know, build up a library of games.
Right.
I guess I'm telling people who are paying attention what they already knew. But
so here's the question. Like, if you sign up for it now, you only get this month's games plus any month of games from this point forward?
Right, yeah. Okay. Like, any month that you're signed up in, you can get the games. Although something weird, Des and I were talking about before the before it started, is apparently you have to actually download the game to tag it.
Right.
Which is I mean, it's not a problem. You know, that just means I'll download whatever games I want. But it's just a really weird quirk.
It's a little asinine. It's weird incentives, I think.
Yeah, the rest of the system is, though, very user-friendly. You know, I like the fact that, for example, if your subscription lapses and then you resubscribe, you don't lose the library you've built up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing, like, if you get a game for free, buy some downloadable content for it, and then your subscription lapses and you decide you want to just straight up buy the game, you still get, like, all the downloadable content you kept.
Jesus, so, I would hope so.
Well, I mean, so it seems like they went through, like, you know, it's actually fairly thought out.
Right.
So it's weird that there's that, I don't know.
Yeah. So what game have you played via this service?
The main thing I've been playing actually has been XCOM.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. I normally don't like strategy games because I don't have, you know, the attention span of a caffeinated ferret. but it's, yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. I don't know, this may be a little bit of a spoiler. I've discovered the location of the alien base, and I'm in the process of building a key. I don't know how far that does. Do you know, like, how far is that in the game?
That's an early on objective. And really, there aren't any huge spoilers in the game. Like, that doesn't give anything away.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where I am right now. I've only lost one dude so far. Had a rookie get double teamed by a group of thin men.
Do you know the name of the man you lost?
No, I really.
Oh, monster.
Part of it was he was a rookie that I was taking on the mission with the
backpedal.
Yeah.
No, with the purpose of training up, so it was.
So he didn't deserve a name yet?
No.
He hadn't earned his name yet.
Well, I mean, technically, within the game, he had not earned his nickname yet, so...
David, his name was Robert Paulson.
Okay.
Anyone? No?
I got it.
Two-thirds got the reference. Yeah.
I missed that one.
We have a quorum on the Fight Club reference.
Yeah, where is I? Oh, yeah, so far I really, really like it, although the one thing that does really annoy me is the fact that you can't pick the class of your characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's tough.
But so far, I don't know, in terms of strategy, it seems like snipers are basically the super class. You know, you can... You know, get to the point where basically they can see anything anyone else on your team can see. So you pretty much just put them on top of a building and have them like headshot anything that anyone else sees.
Hmm. Yeah, that is a very overpowered perk, and I think it's you can either it's like an either or choice when you get to that level. You can either choose the squad sight perk, which you just described, where they can see anything that your team can see. And then I think the other option is like you can fire after moving your character.
Right, which because normally the sniper rifle can.
Yeah. But I mean, like you said, you just park them on top of a building and you don't need to move them. So yeah, it's definitely overpowered and you definitely, definitely abuse that when you're playing through on the harder difficulties.
Yeah. See, that's one thing. I don't know. I'm trying to, you know, maintain an even keel of not quote unquote cheating. Although the one thing I am doing is I'm relying pretty heavily on like the guides to, you know, what abilities are worthwhile, stuff like that. Because it seems like there's definitely a very big variance in some of them.
Yeah, It's tough to say. Like, I can see how many of the skills would be useful, but usually, yeah, I had a favorite upgrade path for everything that I didn't really deviate from.
Yeah, I mean, at least what I've been doing is, ultra sniper focused snipers, rocket focused heavies, medic focused support, and then tanky. Assaults, but
yeah, that works. That works. I actually took my assaults. I have begun to take them. I took away their shotguns and I gave them just the normal rifles.
Oh yeah, I don't understand the point of the shotgun actually. But
if you get in, yeah, I played through the first time with shotguns, and it's if you get in close, you're guaranteed a critical hit, which is really, really useful. But when you get to later levels, it becomes so incredibly high risk because you're very rarely charging in on just one enemy. So even if you can get in, get the guaranteed critical hit and take one guy out, now you're super exposed to everyone else. So.
Right. Yeah, I just relatively recently got introduced to the xenomorph things. I forget what they're called.
Aren't they all xenomorphs? Because it's about aliens.
Well, I meant as in like aliens move. That's actually one feature I kind of wish they had implemented. This is just completely like wish list. Is I wish when you first met like an alien race. Or, you know, one of the specific, you know, species, it popped up what you want to call them.
Oh, that would be cool.
So like, you know, so, like, these are the generic, you know, like, lots of legs bug monster. So, you know, if it would pop up and, like, hey, look at that Zergling, Xenomorph, Skitterer, Tyranid. You know, whatever.
That pretty much entirely like lends itself to people just trying way too hard to be funny, though. For some reason, I like the idea of it. All I can think of is there's an iOS game that's like a it's like an epidemic simulator. It's called Plague Inc. Like Plague Incorporated.
Oh yeah.
And my virus name every time when it's not Captain Trips is Butt Bugs. Like 60 million people have died to butt bugs.
Well, as my suggestions show, I would just name them after various science fiction franchises,
which is what I did with Captain Trips. But you know,
I think I would go with Cyrus the Virus. But
what? Is that like some kind of weird like letter people shit?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, because I don't actually know what any of the races are called. I just know what I call them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know.
Ad hoc nomenclature, yes.
Yeah, but yeah, so far it's a lot of fun. Freaking Asia needs to get in line and stop panicking. But...
Finally, someone else is brave enough to say it.
It is true. You have your problem, children.
Careful.
I do feel kind of weird. Like some of the nations that are on my team, the fact that like I'm apparently selling them like alien technology and stuff like that seems a little questionable.
Well, you know.
Yeah. It's like I just thought it was. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like as a very pertinent example, Egypt is not stable right now. I do not want them to have super weapons.
No beam guns.
Yeah, just give us some beam guns. This is good. It'll reduce panic. Right.
Yeah, to ashes. It will reduce panic to ashes, Dennis.
Yeah, I do. I think it's funny. Your squad members have nationalities. They got a little flag from the country they're in on their backs. And so, like, you know, when my super elite assault guy was an Israeli, I'm like, oh yeah. Or like at one point, all the assault people on my team were Irish. It's like I'm sensing a trend here.
Like Seamus McO.
Yeah, they actually do try to do the naming, I think, you know, with...
Oh, the different nationalities? Okay.
Yeah.
It's relatively consistent.
The one thing I... That does, though... Well, one of the things that bothers me... There's always something that bothers me, unfortunately. The fact that apparently... you know, I'm trying to save the world from, you know, existential threat, and they're sending me complete rookies that haven't even been trained in a vocation.
Yeah.
I mean, really, guys?
That makes sense.
I mean, think about it. My entire team so far is, I think, like 7 or 8 characters, you know, fighters that I've actually fielded. I think America... alone could supply 7 or 8 like Green Berets.
Yeah, you'd think they could spare it,
but
I referenced the letter people earlier, and so that made me look them up on Wikipedia. Apparently, they revised the whole roster. The letter people, it's a cartoon that was devised to teach the alphabet to little kids.
Oh, I know the letter people, man. Okay. That was some good stuff.
Yeah, so some people don't know. But they updated it in 1996, which was after I went through my letter people phase.
And they made it kind of ultra politically correct.
A little bit, yeah. So, like, some of the ones that used to be about, like, sugary snacks. So Mr. C was originally Mr. Cotton Candy, turned him into Colossal Cap.
X is no longer all messed up.
Yeah, all mixed up, rather. He's different. Like, which feels
not
a little...
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Mr. V went from Violet Velvet Vest to Vegetable Vest. Mr. S.
Wait, what? How is that?
It's still like they just
destroying my childhood piece by piece.
They just put that in. Mr. S is still Mr. Super Socks because he was my favorite. That's good. But here's what I want to reference here. Miss I turned from Itchy Itch or Incredible Inventor to Mr. I Impossible Inches.
What?
Yeah.
No, wait, from the old to the new, you're referencing.
Yes. So.
Well.
There we go.
Side note, Cyrus the Virus was one of the characters in Con Air. That's why
Okay. Nice. Why didn't I catch that? Huh.
I was too focused on Dave Chappelle the entire time.
Oh man, yeah. So I'm curious about XCOM. They put it out on iPad, but I don't know if I want to drop the $20 to find out if it does or doesn't work well.
Yeah. I would say I don't know. I actually the interface. I think the interface leaves a little bit to be desired on the PS3, but I think that's just a process of. I think that's all on the whole a good thing just because it's a sophisticated game, so there's lots of things you can do, which means sometimes you have to navigate menus.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see it actually even working better with a touchscreen, because one thing that is a little annoying is trying to place your characters exactly where you want.
Right. See, but that can be like that can be really tough even on a touchscreen too, like Final Fantasy Tactics. That was one of my biggest problems was like mishaps. Fortunately, it's turn based, so you can take all the time that you want. But there's a certain certainty. Good Lord, there's a certainty to inputting with a controller or a keyboard. Although I understand the game was designed with a controller in mind, that a touchscreen just kind of doesn't have. Yeah. So I just like I might just. I don't know. It's a tough decision. In a way, it would be easier if it was just like PS3 and Xbox, but them's the breaks.
Yeah.
They. I can understand aesthetically why they don't do it this way, but the game is grid based.
Right.
But they make it look like it's not grid based. I feel like I kind of wish they'd just. Left it as overtly grid based.
Yeah, it's a choice that they made for you. Like a different game, like probably would have like put in a toggle for the grid overlay. But yeah.
Well, just because like heaven help you if you don't get your guys behind cover. I mean,
right?
Yeah, and usually it's the grid shows up because it kind of snaps to cover. But there are some specific instances where it actually is strategically sound to leave them out of cover.
when you're using them as bait,
basically,
when they haven't earned their names
actually,
yet.
You're Mr. B for bait.
Yeah. Also, when they're running away.
Yeah.
My favorite mission so far, and this is kind of a perverse incentive, is the panic missions, because basically you have a whole bunch of civilians. But each turn, most of the time, basically the aliens don't do anything until you find them. But in this mission, they're actually moving around, and when they encounter a civilian, they kill him. And so normally the game is about being ultra, ultra slow. You know, generally speaking, you take a half move each turn and then set up for covering fire. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden on these missions, it becomes just send your guys running off as fast as you can to try to get to the civilians and to a certain degree cover be damned.
Yeah. No,
that's a case where, like, you know, there would be times where, like, I would choose to, you know, run up and not take cover but rescue a civilian or try to draw fire.
And in that instance, they'll still snap to the grid, but it's hard, like, your cursor doesn't move with the grid, so. Anyway, yeah, I would love to dissect this game more with you once you've played it a bit further, because it only gets more intricate.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, like this may have surpassed, like, Mass Effect 2, Walking Dead, Dark Souls, in terms of number of episodes where this has been, like, like on the list. I haven't gone back and done, like, a statistical analysis of it yet, but we've talked about this a lot, which isn't a bad thing.
You think we've talked about this more than Dark Souls?
Yeah, I don't think Dark Souls.
I think Dark Souls. By sheer episode count. God help you, I will go back and look.
Because I feel like Dark Souls was on for like a year running, at least.
In passing, but like as part of a what you've been playing. Like my first playthrough of that was over in like a month.
Gotcha.
So what now?
Drop the microphone.
The problem was just the next five playthroughs.
Oh man, I can't drop the microphone. It's on a stand. I can like
knock it off.
I can bump the pop filter against the desk, but that's about it. No, yeah. it's like bolted to my desk. It is a broadcast arm, you guys. It is a completely silent broadcast arm. I can't drop the mic.
Knock over the desk, Cole.
Overturn it in your rage.
I swear to God, I will flip a table.
Flip a table and drop the mic at the same time.
I know, dang. Right?
Yeah, the only one that flipping a table is on my bucket list.
No, oh, gosh. It is so easy to do. Just like
don't look back, David.
No, see, the thing is, it has to be in context. So I either A, someone has to say something like that enrages me, or B, I have to be like, you know, someone busts in the door and starts shooting and I'm creating cover.
No.
It has to be one of those two scenarios.
It's better if it's unprovoked.
Yeah, I was going to say, what if someone just says something that's really trivial? Like I think McDonald's is all right.
I prefer soft serve to Froyo. Son of a bitch!
Don't you talk about Whippy Dip like that.
Whippy Dip? Dipping dots are not space age.
It's a conspiracy, man.
You squeeze your pencil so tight that it shatters into splinters and gets blood everywhere. Oh, good lord. That's pretty funny. David, have you been playing anything else?
One other thing. One of our viewers, who was it that suggests we check out Rogue Legacy?
Carlo.
Yeah, Carlo hopping on there, and literally my entire fucking Steam list, everybody playing this goddamn game, and I can't play it.
Why not?
Because I don't have a PC.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
No, well, okay, I do have a PC.
I'm not even
but
touching that one.
I do have. Come at me, bro. I know I'm wide open, all right? But it's. No, it's one of the few, like, Windows games that my 5-year-old, 6-year-old now, MacBook Pro can't play. My old one, my designated Windows machine. So I've got to, at the very least, step that one up a little bit. But it looks amazing. Is it as good as it looks, David? Tell me about the rabbits, David. Tell me about the color blindness, David.
Well, right now I've just toured around with the demo. I'm probably gonna actually pick up the full game when we're done with the podcast. But yeah, so far, yeah, it's basically a Metroidvania game. With the unique features being that it's roguelike, so, you know, it's got permadeath, except that after you die, one of your ancestors picks up the mantle to start up where you left off and can spend all the money you earned in the last playthrough to, like, you know, buy permanent upgrades.
Right.
And then also the interesting thing is each, you know, each of your ancestors has descendants in reverse. I know ancestors in reverse. I don't know. Anyways, each of the peoples, you know, is completely randomly generated, and they, you know, can have abilities like or traits such as, you know, colorblindness, you know, so where everything appears, you know, black and white, grayscale in the game, or nostalgia, where everything is Sapa toned. they can be a giant, or, I mean, the list goes on and on. There's like ADHD, irritable bowel syndrome, homosexuality.
I like the IBS one because every time you jump, you fart.
Right, exactly.
This is made by Cellar Door Games, the same people who made Don't Shit Your Pants. So,
how many of the effects are actually like meaningful gameplay wise? Like, I could see sepia tone being cute, but not necessarily impacting the game.
It's some of them. I don't know, half and half. Some of them are like, for example, if you're a giant, your character is bigger, so he's, you know, easier to hit, but at the same time you have longer reach on your weapon. There's one where I forget what it's called, but you cast all your spells backwards.
Dyslexia.
Actually, dyslexia is one of them, and that just makes all the text in the game garbled. being nearsighted, everything is fuzzy except like near your character,
right?
And there's a whole bunch. Probably the weirdest one is vertigo, which is the game screen is flipped upside down, which is crazy disorienting. But then there's also a lot of them that have no real effect. So
right, and you like gotta hope to get one of those because that puts you at less of a disadvantage.
Right, exactly. So
like it has like shades of like a Binding of Isaac, where says the man who hasn't played it. But from what I've seen, where like you're kind of like rolled with this thing at the beginning that may or may not affect you, right?
Right, exactly. And it's interesting. One of the interesting things, I'm gonna have to like pull up some interviews just because I'm kind of interested to see, is it kind of comes across as if to a certain degree kind of the point is kind of to have a little bit of a message of overcoming adversity, you know, that sort of thing. And I'd be interested to know if that was actually, you know, a specific, you know, thing they meant to do, or if it was just kind of a fun thing they did. But the only downside I've seen to it so far that's a little disappointing is you can upgrade equipment, but you're always using a sword. There's no like, Symphony of the Night thing where it's like, oh, now I'm using a spear. Mm-hmm. You know, all these just random weapons.
Right.
But, it seems really cool. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it looks amazing, and it's kind of taking off. If I mean, like literally, I wish I would have taken a screenshot of like having six people online on my friends list and all of them playing Rogue Legacy.
Yeah, so. I don't know. For me, you know, I think I actually commented last time. Well, it was on last time, but you know what I mean. Like, I like a lot of the roguelike games people coming out from the gameplay perspective, but I don't like permadeath. I don't like starting over.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this one kind of reminds me of Dark Souls in the degree of they found a way to do a sort of permadeath-esque thing without having you actually start all over.
Right. Neat.
So, good stuff.
And with that, we've gone to even on this episode on the XCOM versus Dark Souls counter.
Oh!
Wait a minute. That supposes that they were even to begin with.
Oh, man. I meant just for this episode.
Oh, okay. Just for this episode. So this is net neutral. Wait.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It's like, you know, it's like a hole in golf that we parred this one.
Yeah. Who wants to volunteer to go next?
I actually have been playing a new thing with Dark Souls, so I can talk about that real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
I finally, probably 2 months after I bought it, got to the DLC.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, Artorias of the Abyss. And so if any of you are familiar with Bonfireside Chat, they recently did the episode on that, and I was like, well, I can't listen until I've played it. But it's been great. It's, you know, it's more of the good old Dark Souls you love, where, you know, you go through an area for the first time and you're just inching your way along and everything is killing you and it seems so difficult. And then once you finally get through that area once, your next time through, you just sprint past everything, you know, it like the back of your hand, and you feel like such a an expert. Mm-hmm. So I really liked the first boss. So the DLC kind of drops you right into a boss for the start.
Right.
It's like, yep, here's what you love about Dark Souls. We're not gonna make you dance around at all. Here's a really cool boss fight. I really liked that boss. It would, it felt like a challenge, and I guess what I liked about it is that, you know, there wasn't a gimmick to it. It felt like, you know, a very fair fight, which is, I think, what Dark Souls does so well. And then just the overall feel of the place is really cool. You know, exploring and finding those tiny little nooks and crannies that turn out to be whole other huge areas, mm-hmm. like where it's like, oh, hey, there's a secret path down into this crevice that I thought was just a, you know, bottomless pit, but turns out to be a whole canyon. And then, oh, my God, at the end of this canyon, there is a whole lake. And, you know, it's just really, really cool that way. So I'm currently stuck on what I think is the second boss, which is Artorias.
Right.
And that's a really cool boss fight. There's a missed opportunity, though, because in the opening cutscene, and I don't know, do you think to talk about it is spoilery at all?
It's so weird with anything Dark Souls.
I
would err on the side of caution.
Okay. But I like the character designs in the area a lot, we'll say.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just really cool, and some of them are cute in weird ways, and yeah, it's very Dark Souls where everything is just like a 5 degrees off normal, mm-hmm. and that's really cool. So I was trying to get to the DLC with my second character, kind of hit a difficulty wall on Ornstein and Smo, so I went back and did New Game Plus with my original character. Mm-hmm. And kind of blew through the first half of the game to get to the DLC in no time flat. It was amazing.
Right.
Which just reinforces how well the game rewards mastery. But yeah, so I've been playing that, and that's kind of a more of what you love, but also with some interesting twists on it. So that's good.
Nice. Yeah. No, it's definitely one of the best DLC packs from any game. All my thoughts have been spilled via the, you know, the episode that we just put out. But yeah, let me think here. What else?
I tried Little Big Planet Karting, and the two words I have for that is wasted potential.
Oh, but I think by that I mean Mod Nation Racers.
No, Mod Nation Racers was excellent. Loved it. And this crappy excuse for a pseudo spiritual sequel just
Is that a PSN like a PSN arcade game, for lack of a better identifier off the top of my head right now?
Yeah, like it's. I mean, yeah, it's. It feels like it could be. The thing is that the level creator is so damn powerful. So I went into the, after finding the single player decidedly boring and sloppy and just not very good, I was like, all right, I'm going to put this down and probably not pick it back up ever. I'll try dipping into the community. Mm-hmm. And whereas with Little Big Planet proper, really, I think the best content is in the original levels. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff the community has done, but the creator levels are just incredibly high quality. it's reverse in this. So the first level I played from the community was an homage to Sonic's Green Hill Zone.
God.
And like, because there's always a homage to Sonic's Green Hill Zone.
Yeah, Mario 1-1 and Green Hill Zone. They might as well just like ship those day one on the disc.
But the amazing thing was like it totally captured the essence of it. And the race had you like jumping off of Sonic bouncers, which I don't know how they designed that or made it work within the game world or what have you, but like it just all was completely in Sonic's design. And I think if, you know, if someone had decided to make a Sonic racer, which I know they have, this would have fit right in. It was amazing. The second level that I played from the community was like a battle level, and you were in a submarine, like you were, you know, you were miniaturized and in a submarine. Where kind of there was a ground level and then all these terraces that you could kind of go up onto. And halfway through the game, all these sirens start going off and the bottom level floods with water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to complete the second half of the battle all completely up on the terraces, which the ability to, and again, this all looked like professional. This looked like it came on the disc. And just that the ability, you know, doing a 2D platformer, okay, that's, you know, a pretty limited set of conventions, and Little Big Planet 2 expanded on that immensely just by essentially giving you a very rudimentary programming system. But to have, you know, to be able to do those sorts of cool things in a kart racer really blew my mind. So that was pretty cool.
So I'm only hearing positive things out of you.
Oh, you want to hear the negative? We'll be here all night if I do all the negative.
Give me something to justify that initial response that you had.
The racing feels bad. Like, I don't know any other way to say it than that. Like, just there's no feeling of momentum, even when you're drifting and getting boosts. There's no real feeling of feedback. None of the weapons make any sense. In terms of just like strategy and how to use them, like there's a boxing glove that jets you forward and can knock people off the track, and then you can do the same thing, only instead of a boxing glove it's a rocket, and they're like identical in functionality as far as I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that the track design is uninspired and just feels cluttered, and I don't know, it's just like there's too many random props per minute, per mile, whatever you want to call it, RPPM.
When you say props, do you mean like the weapons or like actually like ramps and stuff?
No, like the scenery surrounding it. And I guess that's the big difference from Mod Nation Racers, is where Mod Nation Racers felt like, you know, you kind of developed a piece of terrain and then built a track around that terrain. This feels like someone just built a random track and then put up a wall on either side that had scenery. You know? Mm-hmm. And so all of it feels somewhat like you're racing through a tunnel. But they've very densely populated the scenery on either side, I think probably to limit how far you can see and not realize that it is just kind of walling you in.
Right.
To where it feels like there's too much going on. And again, all that maybe could be dismissed if it was a solid racer. But just the handling of the cart does not feel right.
Yeah,
which, you know, we've talked about the Mario standard, right? So maybe this is just, it doesn't feel like Mario Kart. But again, wasted potential. There's some really cool track editor in there. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like the creators were able to do anything cool with their own editor.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
This was a free one from the PSN, or were you?
Oh, from PlayStation Plus. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Can you still slap people? Because that was probably my favorite feature from Little Big Planet.
This is the thing. The other drivers could slap me. I couldn't figure out how to slap back.
Bastards.
Which I know that was kind of like a hidden feature in the main games that I figured out, but I wasn't able to figure it out in this one. So.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
So, it's funny. I can't say unacceptable without somebody doing that to me now.
It's nigh Pavlovian.
Oh man.
Yeah,
well, I'm sorry you're disappointed by a thing.
Yeah. That's all right. The Dark Souls DLC more than made up for it.
True. Ben, how about you?
So I don't. How far was I on The Last of Us the last time that we talked?
You seem to be far enough in to have a good feel for it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that was after the first week I played. I beat it the second week. It's good. It's yeah. It's everything that I was hoping for. It eventually branches into a story of its own. So I think I don't know if I expressed any grievances about it or not, but one of the things that I didn't like about maybe the first couple hours is it seemed to lean pretty heavily on the references that it was going off of.
Yeah, we spoke
about that. Yeah, you mentioned that.
You did.
Okay, but yeah, it kind of develops into its own story somewhat. So, so that was good. And it was, yeah. I mean, it was definitely. Basically, I'm just happy if a story is not conventional. If it's not, if it makes you, you know, think about something. So it achieved that, and I recommend that you guys play it, so we can talk about it pretty much. So, yeah. I don't. So, go ahead.
Does it give away anything to ask? Does it play on the whole dadding of games the way that The Walking Dead does?
It's different in the sense, yeah. So in this game, you are an older man, and your companion is a younger girl, just like in The Walking Dead. So that's kind of an easy comparison to draw when you're playing it. I think one of the main differences is the girl in this one is independent. She talks and behaves like much older than her age, whereas I feel like Clementine talked and behaved much younger than her age, or maybe just at her age.
Yeah.
So there's not as much of a sense of I need to protect this person as much as it's just a companion that you talk to. So I don't want to say too much about it though, because that's kind of the focal point of the game. So, yeah. But yeah, so you guys all have PS3s, so you should all play it and beat it
on it.
All right. I guess we'll maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it in the future. From that, I'm
multiplayer.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So all right.
I started up the multiplayer this last weekend. It's pretty boss. Or at least I'm pretty happy with it so far. It has definitely a similar feel as like Modern Warfare 2's multiplayer, where it's the more you play, the more you unlock sort of feel. But the nice thing about it, so it's they have like a little meta game in there as well. So the way it works is you can play one of two rounds. One round is a sudden death round, where you have one life. If you die, you're out for the round, and you just try and kill everybody else. The other game type is a 4-on-4, and there's 20 lives for each team. And once the lives run out, then it's sudden death for that team. And then once they all die, then the other team wins.
So there's no just, like, team deathmatch?
Well, I mean, that's kind of their version of team deathmatch, I guess.
That's too bad.
It's
that's
a team deathmatch that is truly a actual team deathmatch.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's eventually death in it. So while you're doing this team deathmatch, though, there's four different stations on the map that have supplies. So I know I mentioned one of the things you can do in the game is you kind of scavenge for supplies, and then with that you can build things like a Molotov cocktail or a health kit or I don't know, various things. So with the supplies you can build things, but then additionally you can get parts which will unlock upgraded versions of the weapons in the game so that you can kill better, essentially. Or more efficiently, and or you can buy ammo, or you can buy armor while you're playing the game. But then on top of that, all the supplies you collect go towards this meta game that they have. And so what happens is when you start playing the multiplayer, you have a camp of people, essentially. So instead of it just being like you're one person playing this team deathmatch all the time, you are like, it's kind of like a Tamagotchi where you get this camp of people, a camp of survivors. And so if you do well in the team deathmatch and collect enough supplies for everybody, you can gain more survivors and you keep everybody healthy. If you do poorly in a match and don't get a lot of supplies, then some of your people will get hungry. Some of them will get sick. Huh. And then at various times, you'll have it'll say something like raiders are trying to attack your survivors, and you'll have to choose like a bonus objective to do in the next three games you play. And so it could be like headshots, or it could be specific types of kills, or could be healing people. And the better you do at that, the better your survivals will do in the metagame, essentially. So it's a really interesting twist. And in addition to this, the more supplies you collect, the more you unlock as far as creating classes.
Oh, wow.
So the better loadout you can have and the more options you can have of what perks you get and stuff like that. So in that way, it's kind of like Modern Warfare.
That sounds pretty well thought out. That sounds really cool.
It's been really interesting. So I've played it pretty heavily the last couple of days, and it's held up so far. I'll keep you guys updated on if it keeps up or not. But it is a lot of fun. As far as the classes go, you can one of the more interesting classes is their stealth class is a bow and arrow, and a silenced pistol, and it can be pretty effective if used right. But then other than that, there's a sniper class, and then there's your typical assault class, and then there's a support class that just focuses on healing other people, and then they generate like random packages to give to another person that'll be a different perk or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. Also, while playing this game, when you kill other people, they'll drop supplies, so you can pick them up from them too. So it rewards killing people too.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
Just like real life, man.
Yeah.
Oh no.
So that's been a lot of fun so far.
Yeah.
So have you played any of the in terms of the feel of the shooting, it's a third person game, right?
Correct, yeah.
So, I mean, does it kind of have like an Uncharted multiplayer type feel, or?
I never played too much of the Uncharted multiplayer, so I can't speak too much to that. It plays similarly to the main game, and the main game, I guess, is pretty similar to Uncharted. It's a little bit different, maybe.
Okay.
It's a little bit more deliberate from what I've played of it.
Okay.
Yeah, but by that I mean just a little bit more. You have to think about your shots more.
There's less ammo.
Yeah,
essentially.
But like even that, like the recoil, like you can't just. It felt like in Uncharted, it was like you put your cursor over something, and really you could just fire as quickly.
Empty
as
the
you.
Trigger.
Yeah. Whereas with this, just like it has a little bit more of like a gut kickback to it.
Yeah.
That's my appraisal of it, though. Huh. So.
Yeah, so I was going to say that's all I've been playing. So why don't we talk about what you've been experiencing with this game so far, then, Cole?
Yeah, well, I'm not incredibly far in it. I play the opening, and then I think I'm like maybe like one or two missions in. I don't want to say anything about the story or what I'm doing at this point, just because it all feels up for grabs at the beginning, and I don't want to ruin that. But holy shit, that intro!
Yeah,
yeah, that was really really effective.
I want to send you a video, and I want to encourage our listeners to watch it if they've already played the beginning of The Last of Us. But it's a video of Seth Rogen playing The Last of Us, the intro of it. Have you seen that?
No, I've seen the headline of it.
Okay, it's pretty entertaining. But anyway, go on.
No, but so that's really all that I feel comfortable saying. I would like to play more of it, however, other things have gotten in the way.
Just so I get a feel for how far you are in it, how long have you played it for?
Probably like an hour, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
what time of day is it in the game?
It is still daytime.
Okay. It's always a good indicator. It's funny.
Wait, so is this like an open world game or?
No, it's pretty strictly mission based.
It's like Uncharted, where it's a corridor, but it's a very curvy corridor, so it doesn't feel like a corridor.
Right. They do. It's a roller coaster ride. It's like a roller coaster ride. I think if it actually feels pretty similar to like Half-Life 2 at this point, which is really weird.
That was something I compared it to a lot too when I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
So basically, a not open world game that kind of tries to feel open world.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, Half-Life 2 is quite possibly one of my favorite games of all time. But,
yeah, it's really, really good.
So, do you have does it do options, the multiple endings, or would that be spoilery?
What do you mean?
Are there
like key decision points? Like,
yeah, or are there any decisions? Is it?
I don't think there. I think it's similar in style to Uncharted.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, they take a lot of control over the narrative. It seems more than would indicate they would let you choose how that thing ended. So yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So yeah. It's really good. I picked it up like on a whim. I was just like, it was like last Thursday. I was walking to get lunch, and the place where I went for my burrito was right next to my old GameStop. I was like, hey, I'll stop in. It's like, yeah, I'll buy it, whatever. So, you know. But yeah, have you played anything else, Ben, or will I continue?
You continue save? That. That is all that is on my gaming plate. So.
Understood. Cool. Yeah. So that was a big one for me. Let's think here.
Hurry up and beat the game and get into the multiplayer so we can play it together.
Yeah. I need to do that. I would like to beat it very quickly, but, because I want to see this thing. I want to see all of it. Looking here, played a little bit more State of Decay. I got really discouraged because one of my main characters died, which doesn't like necessarily stop everything, but you sink a lot of like time into making them better, you know. It was like a stupid mistake. I got into a house and I fired a gun and it drew a horde, and it's really discouraging when somebody gets torn apart because they are literally torn apart. Yeah. So
is
I don't
it like. Is it like Shaun of the Dead graphic?
Yeah. That's a pretty good. Yeah. You know, like you see guts everywhere and stuff like that. They really try and hammer it home. But yeah, like it has a really satisfying loop of like trying to clear out the different waypoints and things like that. Because having zombies around you, like around your safe house, lowers morale and like it makes doing certain things cost more influence. And if there are zombie, like if there are zombie hordes or zombie nests, nearby, you have to go clear those out. But you have to make sure that you have enough supplies and people and everything. And certain missions will take you there with more people, which can either go well or go poorly. Because sometimes the AI doesn't go, you know, doesn't do that well. But it feels like I don't even know how to compare it. But it's like it's maintenance, right? It's just kind of like, okay, we need more building materials. So you look at your map, and there's like, okay, we have these building sites here, here, and here. I can go to these places, clear them out methodically, and then radio in for like home base to come in, and then pick that stuff up themselves. And you just kind of like go out on these missions. And like that you really just kind of like make for yourself, and it's just identifying certain opportunities that are around, and kind of something that's always kind of in the back of my mind is the idea that like, oh, we may need a different place to live, because ostensibly any building I've not determined like what makes it a safe house or not, but you can like walk in and say, okay, this is the new safe house now.
Never mind the zombies in the basement. This is the safe house.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to. It has to be cleared out or whatever. But okay. But so it's like always in the back of the mind. Like right now, I'm still pretty early on. I'm at a church. But, you know, thinking like, okay, like looking for bigger and bigger buildings to clear because they may be suitable, right? Because eventually you're going to clear out all of the resources that are handy. And it's a really, really big map.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so good.
So it sounds like this game like has like a hope meter then. And like, I mean, that'd be great if they had a function like the way you beat the game is to have everybody have hope in the world.
Kind of. I mean, like if the way that I understand it, if a certain person's morale meter goes low and it goes low enough, they will like go out into the woods and, you know.
End it.
Yeah.
They'll Charlize Theron it from the road.
Yes. Yes, that like they will, and that'll bum everybody else out, and it has like a cascading effect. So It really it, like you have to manage that morale, right?
Yeah.
Is that a game you can beat?
Yes, there is an end objective, from what I understand. However, I do not know what the end objective is.
There is. They just won't tell you.
Yeah. Well, it's not apparent. Like just because right now you're so focused on like survive. Keep everybody happy, build up, you know, and you have fame, you know, so, you know, having high morale and high fame gets people to come join you. There's like the justification for that I heard was like without television or magazines or whatever, people are looking for somebody to worship. So,
already in a church. So there you go.
Hey, why not? Come to me. Yeah. So it's real good. I think it's coming to PC here pretty quick. They're really blowing up with the success on it. It seems well earned. Good.
Is it just on Mac right now?
It is just Xbox Arcade.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Which it's kind of a misnomer because it's $20 and it's a gigantic download. Like they just do that because that's technically cheaper than trying to get it into GameStop or something, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like it. It's real good. Let's see here. There was a game. So I've been playing Demon's Souls to catch up for. Like that's what I've spent a lot of my vacation doing, actually. To play like playing Demon's Souls to catch up.
Yeah, I see you on there every time I log on now.
Yeah, I know, right? So it's, you know, I'm trying to get there for Bonfireside Chat. I'm trying to get ahead. Like I'm like several months ahead on my like homework games, so I can like focus on playing other stuff. You know,
Cole,
like,
have you been doing your homework?
Kind of. Well, it's like boo hoo. I need to play video games. I mean, most of them are treats, you know. But like with some of them, it's like, oh man, Dark Souls. That's a huge game, and I'm trying to, you know, get through it. And I'm like to this point where, like, I've got the first world of, or you know, the first stage of every world opened up. You know, like, you know, beaten, but then I'm in the second where it really like, you know, steps up. So like, you know, 5-2 is really difficult. You know, 2-2, the boss on that's really hard. Same thing with 3-2. And so it's just kind of like taking, like making little attempts until you get frustrated with one world and then thinking like, okay, I need to go do something else. So in a way it's more open than Dark Souls. You know, because it does give you that option to go try something else. And, you know, you just gradually you get a little bit better and you learn these little tricks and then you find a way to break through. But right now it's just kind of like, oh, so I've got the game like 70% beaten, but it just looks like I don't have any of it.
So, and you guys are doing the episodes by the primary numbers as well, right? So you're doing like all of World 1, all of World 2. So you can't just be like, ah, I'll kind of play along. You gotta get through this sucker, right?
Right. So yeah, like that's the goal, is to like have it beaten ahead of time and then just go in and do brush ups, to prepare for different episodes. So, I mean, like I feel a little bit uncomfortable going into like a full blown like analysis of it, other than to say that the structure of it is very strange if you're used to Dark Souls, which although it's ostensibly an open world game, it has a definite critical path to it. And a definite best way to go through it. Whereas every time I've like gone in and done a little bit of you know, research to see like, okay, what's the optimal path through Demon's Souls? There absolutely is not. So it's like good.
Overall, you know, I've played Dark Souls a lot. Haven't played Demon's Souls, but just, you know, from the things I've observed, it seems like Demon's Souls is fairly significantly less polished, a little bit less fair than Dark Souls. Is that Would you agree with that characterization?
Fair is a really tricky word. Like I never feel explicitly fucked over in any case. It's just like it for me it feels like, okay, I know the vocabulary that this developer uses. It's just they're using different tricks here. So
I guess maybe what I would say is it struck me Dark Souls was often difficult, you know, was challenging, you know, expected a lot. It never came across to me like it punished you, whereas a lot of the things I read about in Demon Souls, it felt like they were put in explicitly to punish you.
Can you cite a specific example?
Well, for example, the fact that when you die, you get up to 1/8 your HP?
No, it's 1/2.
Okay, so they... Did they maybe patch that? Because I'm fairly certain wasn't.
You're thinking of Dark Souls with a curse.
No, but regardless, I mean, still, like, you know, that as an example, you know, that being one example, it seems like I remember there being some decisions you can make that kind of screw with you a lot more, stuff like that.
Yeah, Dennis, as somebody who's played more of, you know, who's played more of Demon Souls and, you know, probably as much or more Dark Souls than I have.
I crossed the 100 level mark and the 100 hour mark.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, I've put in plenty of time.
Yeah, can you answer his question?
Yeah, I do remember a lot of instances in Demon Souls, whereas in Dark Souls, if you're paying enough attention, you can generally sneak by or, you know, anticipate what the traps are. I seem to remember a lot more instances in Demon's Souls where it was kind of you had to fall prey to the trap once and there was just nothing you could do about that. And then, you know, then you knew better next time.
But I haven't seen any of those yet. Can you cite an example?
No. So, and again, I was also trying to rush through the game, which I think we've talked about previously.
Right.
So, you know, rushing through the game lends itself to not seeing all those warning signs, lends itself to rage quitting. So,
Okay.
Yep. And I guess I'm also saying, you know, I'm maybe a third of the way through Dark Souls. I don't know if maybe at some point Dark Souls starts screwing you over.
It does.
much more. So, I'm debating getting it on PC so that I might actually finish it. But that's a whole nother issue.
I've heard the PC version's real good.
Yeah, although I've also heard that you pretty much would have to buy a controller.
Yes, you absolutely positively would.
Which... Xbox controllers are expensive, so we'll see.
$30.
Hey, he's a grad student now. That's expensive.
Okay, sorry. I have no metric for these things.
That's like 5 meals.
5 Subway sandwiches, man. Mm. 6 Subway sandwiches.
Yeah, so Demon's Souls, I played... I alluded to this a little bit last week, but there's a game that was made in an engine that I'm looking into just for little side project stuff called Twine, which is a way to make interactive fiction games. It is a game called Depression Quest, which is like a text adventure kind of thing, which is actually, it's really good. I mean, it's kind of in the line of like Cart Life or, you know, That Dragon Cancer, where it's, you know, it's like a persuasive kind of thing. Like they made it. Kind of like, oh gosh, what was that one game that was by MIT? I'll put it in the notes because I can't remember it, but it was made by MIT for Singapore to like explain to somebody who doesn't know what depression is, like doesn't believe it's a thing, to explain what it feels like.
Oh yeah, like you're running on treetops and then you fall down.
Yeah, and then you're like in the caves and things like that. And so this one, it's like a text adventure version of that. And so like it walks through like, you know, regular day to day life. It's like you wake up, but it feels like such an effort to get out of bed, and it's less less glib than that. But, you know, so it describes kind of like what the input is. And then you have like an ongoing score, you know, that is the, you know, that that is your feeling, whether you're neutral or depressed or severely or, you know, doing okay. And then like doing different things like going to therapy or getting on medication will help make that thing better. But what's really interesting about it is, like, you know, because it's a text adventure, you have different options that are available to you, like a choose your own adventure thing. But a certain number of them will be marked out depending on, you know, what your state is. And there are some that are just like your first action in the game. It's like, I can't remember specifically what it was, but it was like, you know, the top answer was like, go to work and feel good about it and attack it with everything you have. And it's like crossed out and you can't do it. And, you know, just like, and there are all these options like that. That would be the one that would make things better, but you just can't do it because of where your mental state's at. So it's this really good, like, you know, very, very well thought out kind of, you know, persuasive piece on what that is. And I would recommend people go play it. It runs in any web browser. It has like a little piano track backing it. There are some, like, you know, not multimedia, but like images, videos that run at the top that just kind of give some context for it and kind of show what this Twine engine can do. But yeah.
By the way, the name of that game is Elude.
Elude. There we go. Okay. Thank you. Yep. So, you know, different things trying to give people insight into different ways of thinking. Dennis, what was that one that was about conformity that you were talking about a while back?
With the cubes. I want to say Fez, but I know that's not it.
Nope.
It was a three letter word like that. Limb, I think.
Yeah, limb. There we go. That's the one. I want to get these in the notes as we reference them because they are things that people should play.
Guys, play good games.
Please do. And then finally, this is only tangentially related, but I feel like it's worth saying. I went to a casino.
Ooh.
Yeah. My family was in town, not last weekend, but the weekend before it. Just looking for something to do, we went to the casino that was put in here in Cincinnati. I'd never been to a casino before. Never really gambled at all aside from like penny poker. I'm already in a program, so you guys don't have to worry. We will make bandwidth, Bill. we're going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay.
I'm putting duck feet on black.
Yeah, as long as there's a no-hitter tonight. Oh, wait.
There is.
Yes.
Oh, really? You jinxed it.
No. What's the guy's name?
Homer.
Yeah, Homer had no homers against him or hits of any sort.
So. Or hits at all. Huh.
Yeah.
Neat. Baseball.
Random. Now guys can pull a it was a good day and figure out what day we recorded this on.
Oh, yes. That's a deep cut. Let's see here. But yeah, no, I went in really just kind of to get a taste for the experience. Thought the atmosphere was real gross.
Sounds like a casino.
Yeah. It was explicitly designed to disorient and overstimulate me. I immediately noticed all of the machines were in the key of C. I didn't understand what any of the games did, and I am not an unintelligent person, I don't think.
Take your money is the good base assumption.
Yes.
I'm just imagining Cole walking into this place and just like freaking out.
Wapner's on at 4, David. So I went in. I wanted to get a taste of the experience. I had $20 in my gambling pocket because that was as much as I was comfortable losing.
So that's like 3 games of poker.
So I didn't do any card games because although I understand those games better and I kind of know that the odds are a little bit more in my favor. You know, the like the minimum bet's like $10 on blackjack or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, you just like, if you're going to go there and like be serious about it, you can, you know, say like, okay, $500, I've set it aside for this trip. I'm going to gamble and see what I can turn it into. But, you know, if you're just there to, you know, to pay way more than necessary for drinks, the slots will be just fine. So, but like there were these ones where it was like five reels, and like the more you bet, the more active lines there were on the screen or something. And like functionally, I know that there's a lot going on in the background, and certain ones have better odds depending on how much you bet and things like that. However, when you're playing a slot machine, and Ben, I am so sorry if I'm insulting anything here. It's like you press the button, and then really all that matters is whether or not that number goes up or down. Right. And
yeah.
And for me, like, I gravitated towards the quarter slots with just the three reels because I knew if I got bar, 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 the number would go up. And like functionally, I could just walk up there, put $20 in the machine and press that button until the number was either much higher or substantially lower than when I started. And it would still be the same thing. But being able to follow it and be like, bing, okay, bing, okay. Oh, no, man, I got it. I'll hit it again. Like, the simpler and more grokkable the experience was, the more I enjoyed it.
Wait, what is this number that's going up and down? I'm not following
like,
that.
Yeah, your take, like the win, right?
Like, wait, like, so it doesn't like dispense coins?
No. It is 2013.
They have the ability there. I've seen people who have little cards, most all seniors, that are just directly connected to their bank accounts.
Yes.
That defeats the entire purpose of using a slot machine. Like, even if you win, that's entirely, why would you even use a slot machine then if when you win it doesn't spit out coins very loudly?
But it makes
either you're looking for
noises.
Something to do with either you're looking for something to do with your family or you are waiting to die. Not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, but like it's so, you know, like my family thought I was nuts because at one point I was like $22 up or something like that. I was like, let it ride. And so I let it ride, and then it rode me straight to No Money Town. And I was like, well, I paid $20 for this hour and a half of being in this uncomfortable room. I'm done.
Yeah. So I have one question and one comment. The question was, is it smoking or non-smoking?
It is non-smoking, thank God.
Ohio's nice. Non-smoking, right?
Yeah. I know,
good.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's thing that's terrible about the casinos, as Dennis will find out tomorrow or the next night. And then, yeah, one comment I had is, yeah, so I've talked to a lot of people that I work with about the casino games and video games and how they are very different from one another.
Yeah.
Because the idea with casino games is you cannot really have any input for it to be a random game, right. You know, like a game of chance. And so just from a regulatory point of view, yeah, you kind of have little input. You press a button and your number goes up or down. And typically the people who are playing those games because they want the number to go up. You know, like they're the point of playing is money, whereas the point of playing a video game is entertainment or thought stimulant, you know.
Experience,
something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
experience and not result.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. So it's kind of interesting comparing those two things, because it's like even the models that they of how they're selling games are, you know, that's changing. You know, like it used to be you pay an upfront fixed cost and then you have a game and you're done, you know, but now it's kind of pay as you play.
Right.
But,
yeah. So like it feels as gross as playing like a free to play game, like the worst examples of free to play stuff. So,
yeah.
What is, maybe this is going off topic of the podcast, but how is Cincinnati, you know, as the community as a whole decided whether they like having a casino, or, you know, is there?
I heard plenty of opposition to it. Like, I'm not personally crazy that we have it here, but I think that it was a pretty close issue, and they're, you know. Like, it hasn't turned out as well as people have hoped. Like, it's going worse in Cleveland, because, you know, a casino only generates as much revenue as there is money in the area, and there is no money up there. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I guess it's just not making much money then.
I have no facts or figures other than to say I'm not too huge of a fan.
There's certainly a lot of people there. I don't know what to say about that.
Like, we were there on a Saturday afternoon, and it was action packed. Yeah. You said you had a statement to make too, Ben?
Talking about the differences between video games and casinos.
Yeah.
Interesting to think about. I much prefer video games to casino games.
Me too. But I felt it was worthwhile to breach the topic here. The topic. I forget Definitely. Which is appropriate. So yeah, that's what I've been playing. Let's see here. I think that's all. Moving on.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you to participate in this big, crazy experiment that we do called podcasting and the level. And this week it was free play, where we asked you to have us answer something.
Ooh, I like these.
I like these too. Yeah. Not a huge response, but that is perfectly fine. Looking at this here, we have one from email. This is from Gary, network person here. This is Gary
friend
Butterfield.
Of the show.
Yes, friend of the show.
I consider him mascot.
Yes, network mascot. he's Gary Buh on Twitter. GARYBUH. Follow him. It's funny. So he asks, is there a good reason not to just play indie or smaller games? Think Walking Dead or Under. The advantages are legion. A direct connection to supporting an artist, less intrusive policies, e.g. DRM, a variety of experiences and subject matter, fewer sequels, a drive for innovation, etc. Given that almost everything you can get from games is available cheaply, immediately, with wide variety and masterfully via the small game scene, what keeps you going back to AAA games?
Polygons.
Yes,
yeah,
polygons.
I could actually... For me, at least, it's just the fact that indie games tend to be a relatively small number of genres. Specifically, they tend to be a ton of puzzle games, some retro games, maybe some RPGs, strategy, and then games that make you think. And all of those things are things I don't like in games. And so for me, it's just, there's been a lot of indie games I've liked, and all things being equal, I'd probably prefer play a video or an indie game, but just they tend not to make the type of games I like.
Hmm.
And yes, I was including, I hate games that make you think. That's I want to blow some dudes up.
Huh. Yeah. I saw this earlier, and I've been stewing on it. I want to give you guys a chance before I do it.
So I'd say one thing that I've started to appreciate about games in the last year or two has been, or at least one thing about AAA games is just kind of the sort of technical achievement that they can be. I guess with thinking about The Last of Us that has played, the things that they did in that game, or at least some of the persistent things that they've done, it seems like it's such a polished experience, and it's such a... I don't like this adjective, but it seems like a robust experience that I have not seen yet in an indie game market. Being able to create a user-centered experience, that's not the right word. I'm at a loss to describe it, but
I think polish is a good word for it.
Yeah.
Although there are plenty of AAA games that fail miserably at that, so...
Yeah.
That's no guarantee at all.
So perhaps I could say it this way, and I know I'm using a lot of vague language, but the sort of functionality trees, or the way that a story can build, not a story.
Systems. You're talking about systems.
I guess. yeah.
Right.
So that was incoherent. You can just cut. You can cut all of that.
It's staying in. No, but you're right. Money, a large budget doesn't necessarily equal quality. However, it can, improve not the story that's being told, but the way it's being told. Right.
It's kind of
not maybe improve, but give access to more ways to tell the story. I think it's, all that a AAA game does is put more tools at people's disposal, but history is rife with example of people who have had all the tools in the world at their disposal and have still screwed things up.
Right.
Sure. Well, I also feel like some of it, there is almost a kind of comparison between the two versus, like, one has innovation, one has polish. You know, I think of almost as, you know, kind of the, like, World of Warcraft, where, you know, a lot of people complained when it came out that, you know, it really didn't innovate that much on the MMO genre, but it just polished it to hell. And I feel like that's one of the things where, you know, a lot of, you know, like Call of Duty isn't that innovative of a shooter. It's just they've taken every aspect of the shooter, and yeah, you kind of know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think the one other dimension that you could consider is that you're essentially paying for the crowd of people who play it.
That's true.
So for very multiplayer centric games like Call of Duty or Battlefield, you know, those are really fun experiences, even if they are shallow from a make you think perspective. But they kind of require a massive base of users to be brought to their full potential. So, you know, the reason that people buy the new Call of Duty every year is not because it's an objectively better game, but because that's what all their friends, and I wouldn't even say friends necessarily, but that's what the masses of people will be playing.
Well, and could you almost extend that and say, you know, similar to movies, you know, people watch different movies for different reasons. You know, I don't watch The Expendables for this, you know, I don't go out with my friends and watch, get some beer and watch The Expendables for the same reason that I watch, you know, Schindler's List or...
But here's the thing. Both of those are big Hollywood movies, gigantic budgets. You
well,
know,
true.
Not every Hollywood movie is Jerry Bruckheimer, and not every AAA game is Call of Duty. You know, let me look here. But like you're looking at the same system, like, you know, this, like, you know, oh man, it gets released in Cinemark. You know, like Cinemark being GameStop, like that puts out both The Expendables 2 and Moonrise Kingdom. Or There Will Be Blood, or something like that. And this is where the argument gets a little bit hazy for me, which is, it seems weird to me to out of hand dismiss a game because of how much money was spent on its development or what channel it came out of.
Yeah. Can I have another go at trying to express my opinions?
Yes.
All right. Round two.
So, I think this question kind of, yeah, tries to separate it into two different groups between, like, indie games and AAA games. And, you know, not every AAA game is better than every indie game, and not every indie game is better than every AAA game. You know, there's definitely variances within those two camps. And so, I think one advantage of AAA games is, since they have such large teams, if a lot of the people on the teams know what they're doing, I think that kind of lends itself to a polished result, because you have a lot of checks and balances in that system where, you know, like, you have a lot of collaboration, a lot of people saying, well, maybe you could do this, this, or this. And so, since thinking of the example of The Last of Us, since that's the last game that I played, or the most recent game I played, you know, like, that's something that excels in art and, like, lighting and technical features that no indie game could, just because of just the scope of it. And not to say that bigger is better, but then to totally go back on that comment, you know, when you play a game that's well done, a AAA game, it's interesting to see what a group of, you know, tens or hundreds of people could do together in one focused vision. And that's kind of something that you can get from a AAA experience that you can't get from an indie. However, I will say that, you know, on the whole, the advantage to indie games is they can take much more risk, since the, you know, development size is shorter.
Yeah, it's just one person's life on the line as opposed to hundreds of jobs.
And, money. And, yeah.
And we mean actually life. When an indie game fails, we take the person out in Old Yeller.
They're immediately struck by lightning. Yeah. I mean, Gary's question is, you know, like
Lightning's what's the name of my gun, by the way.
That's true. And you just pistol with them a couple times and say, get. Yeah. But like to get back to the question, you know, like, you know, is there a good reason why you know, not just to do that? I personally can't justify excluding a whole class of games where a lot of attention and effort are going, you know, just because of the budget that goes into them, because I don't want to inherently restrict the experience that I have. Because if I, out of hand, just ignored things that came out on consoles or, you know, whatever the PC equivalent of that is, you know, like full price, you know, games on Steam, whatever, I wouldn't have played Bioshock Infinite. I wouldn't have played Bioshock. Wouldn't have played Spec Ops. Wouldn't have played Fallout 3. Wouldn't have played Skyrim. Any of these games, you know, over the past several years, ignoring, you know, Dark Souls. which itself is a AAA game. Just kind of like, yeah, I don't see any value in limiting that, because, you know, I think about the games that we play for Watch Out for Fireballs, you know, the majority of which I enjoy. It's like these were the AAA games of, you know, 5+ years ago. And, you know, I like it when I have played those and then coming back to them. So it's a matter of amassing experiences for me.
Well, and the other thing is, I feel like, how do you sometimes define a AAA game? Because I feel like
it becomes No True Scotsman, right?
Right.
Yeah, which is
what's No True Scotsman?
It's a logical fallacy where somebody says, oh man, No True Scotsman would do XYZ. It's like, well, you know, Seamus McGo over there, you know, he murdered his wife. Well, he's not a real Scotsman. No true Scotsman would do that. Well, this person did that. Well, and then it just, like, mm-hmm. It's moving the goalposts, essentially. And so, like, because throwing out Spec Ops, like,
yeah,
is that
seems indie.
But it's not. Like, that was published by 2K.
Indie has become this, like, well, I mean, moniker for good.
Really, you know, I guess that's one of the big things is does it matter who published it or who made it?
I usually think of AAA as in terms of size of the development team.
I guess, but, like, I don't know. I think that in a lot of cases, AAA can be used to, like to... you know, arbitrarily label something that you do or do not like.
You know? Yeah, I mean, in general, if you hear someone throwing those terms around, it probably, if they're saying AAA, it probably means, you know, safe, bland, and guaranteed to make lots of money. And if they're using indie, they probably mean smaller, innovative, and more interesting. Mm-hmm. In which case, no, you really can't justify going for the former. But yeah, so, you know, however you draw those lines, it can make more or less sense.
Like, if your definition of AAA is any of those things, then don't do it. But then the question becomes a little bit moot.
Go ahead, David. Can anyone think of a reason for me to play objectively bad games?
Wait, on the other hand, just to play devil's advocate, a lot of the time, as I kind of alluded to, what I want from the game is bland and guaranteed to have explosions and people getting shot. Like, not gonna lie, there's a lot of times when I just want a game that's simple and has explosions.
Yeah.
But, where did AAA, like, are these, like, games
what's the etymology?
In case you break down on the side of the road?
I don't know. I'm not sure where that nomenclature came from.
Is there a double A game?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of making a single A project
here. The Game Boy Color, right? Those games were double
A. Yeah.
Well played.
That's pretty good. Although the Game Boy Color took double A's, are you thinking of the Game Boy Pocket?
Pocket? Okay.
Yeah.
I got a Pocket right before they came out with Color, and I felt fucked over.
The Pocket was a really well-designed designed piece of hardware. It just wouldn't play all the color games.
Yeah.
Gary goes on to say, I know the correct answer is Dark Souls, but discuss what personally brings you back to these budget bloated monstrosities. Yeah, just everything should be evaluated on its own merit.
They're not all monstrosities.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think Wait, is Ico AAA?
Yeah, published by Sony. Made by an internal Sony, some Sony team for
team,
probably
Team Ico.
Yeah, but no, like Team Ico is an internal team at Sony.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I was just laughing at the fact that Ico was made by Team Ico.
Well, you know, Silent Hill was made by Team Silent. Let's see here, Ben. Read the first of Christopher's questions on the Facebook.
All right, moment. Okay. He has a twofer. I'll read the first one. Since I do nothing but listen to podcasts nowadays, I feel like I need more. And that's including the 36,823 podcasts that Cole does. I didn't know you expanded. I didn't know DuckFeed had gotten that big. So then the question is, what are your podcasting faves? I can start off and answer this one, although it might not be a nice answer for what you're looking for. I listen to Star Talk. So
what is Star Talk?
That's a podcast that Neil deGrasse Tyson does.
Oh, awesome! And
ooh,
so
really?
It's about astronomy. It's fantastic.
I'm subscribing to that right now. I had no idea such a thing existed.
Yeah, you can be like me and go back and listen to all of them from the beginning while playing Civ Rev.
That sounds like an excellent day.
You need to do both of those things at once. Yeah,
of course. Neat.
What about you guys? Podcasting faves.
Podcasting faves. I'm kind of like him in that I really don't do anything but listen to or make podcasts. So it's kind of tough. I'll keep it short. I don't want to mention any obvious ones. Radio Lab, This American Life, both of those are must listens. So in video game podcasts, my favorite is Video Games Hot Dog, which is run by the guys over at Asymmetric Publications. The guys who run Kingdom of Loathing, put out Word Realms. They are really cool dudes, and their podcast is really kind of like illuminating about certain games and types of games that you really wouldn't have played otherwise. They talk a lot about, I learned about Depression Quest from them. Talk about board games and things like that. It's really good, really funny. Some people prefer Idle Thumbs or listen to Idle Thumbs in addition to that. I say, nah, don't do that. Just listen to video games. And then their girlfriends do a companion podcast called Video Games Taco, which is really additionally very, very entertaining as well.
I'm curious, do the games kind of tend to mirror each other?
What do you mean?
Or follow a kind of pattern, like, oh, hey, I'm playing XYZ, and then, 3 weeks later, the girlfriend is like, oh, hey, I'm playing XYZ. Kind of the way we hand around games on this podcast.
Not really. Maybe there is. I just haven't paid attention to. I haven't broken out the colored yarn. And for non-video game podcasts, Roderick on the Line, hosted by John Roderick from The Long Winters and Merlin Mann of Back to Work and You Look Nice Today. It is the heir apparent to You Look Nice Today. It is also incredibly funny. That is one that I feel more comfortable outright recommending than Back to Work, which is more if you're interested in productivity kind of stuff. But even then, it's not really about that. That's more about comics. But yeah, Roderick on the Line is the way to go.
Nice. I look through, I'm looking at my podcast feed right now, and of course I'm subscribed to all of the DuckFeed ones, but it sounds like you're already there, Chris. So, actually, if you like the stuff on the DuckFeed network, you really need look no further than fans of the DuckFeed network. That I know of, there is the Dork Knight podcast, which is Murph Murphy, mm-hmm. And the Ninjas Versus podcast, which is Tyler Crumrine.
Yes.
Both of which are very much worth checking out. I'm trying to think if there are any other podcasters that we hear from on any sort of regular basis.
Yeah, there is the Press Pause podcast. They listen to us. I feel like a dick for not mentioning our fans, but yeah, we have a lot of podcasting fans, listeners who also make their own shows.
Can we call them pod pals?
Yeah, let's pod buddies.
I thought pod about pod people. Just like what was that? What was that horror movie?
what was it?
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Yeah,
love
That's
that.
It.
Love that movie. Yep. How about you, David?
I actually pretty much don't listen to podcasts. I'm ADHD, so I cannot listen to podcasts while working or like any other situation where I actually want to get stuff done. So that kind of cuts into it. I do really like, specifically on the network, I really like the pitch. Because and I've done some, so there's a meditation podcast called The Meditation Podcast. That's just, you know, a series of guided meditations. So that, I guess that's rather specific. You don't just listen to that. But if you're looking for something like that, it's pretty sweet.
Nice. And then let's blast through this last one here real quick. Let's see here, Dennis.
The next one is, what are the scariest video games that you have played? And I think I might demand an amnesia exclusion because we all know how awesomely scary that damn game was. So scariest aside from Amnesia, I'm always looking for a new one to play extremely slowly over 3 years because I run into such, or I turn into such a baby when it comes to games as opposed to horror films and books. Well, joke's on you because you said no Amnesia, but you did not say no Penumbra.
Yeah, Penumbra is a good, that is a pro play.
Yeah.
Yeah. It runs a lot of the same tricks. It doesn't, it doesn't do the same, it doesn't have the same like level of fidelity, but sorry, R2-D2 is beeping at me. That is my text tone. Yeah, but Penumbra is real good. I would recommend, like, if you're looking for mainstream console type stuff, the Resident Evil remake is actually one of the scariest survival horror games I've ever played, just because it is probably the master of tension. And then additionally, if that's not your thing, like the zombies, then Silent Hill 3, I think, might be one of the most scary of that series. So yeah, I would recommend, you know, of those two mainstream. And then there are some pretty good, you know, like non-mainstream ones, like Lone Survivor is really good.
Oh, yeah.
There's a nice, really creepy one called Home that just got put out on iOS here recently.
What was the game that was in the same spirit as Infinity Blade for iOS? That was
Dark Meadow or something like that.
That's
pretty good too. Although that has like a lot of humor elements to it as well.
There was a game that was played entirely without a screen. It was entirely by sound cues.
That is Papa Sangre.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's plenty there for you to go. I'm going to be starting the Hex Crank project here soon, and that is going to kick off with kind of like a master list of survival horror games that people can contribute to, like to lay out the project. So look for that soon. I've got like a list of maybe like 80 games right now, which I'm looking to expand. So
that's all the episodes.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be a full-blown podcast. We're still trying to decide what form it's going to take. But
right, you talked about like a blog or what have you.
Yeah. So, you guys, any scary games that haven't popped up? Yep.
Yeah, so I had a couple. One game that I know that was pretty terrifying that I played through college that I had to play very much in piecemeal was Dead Space, the original Dead Space.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good call.
So I know that. Yeah, that brought out my inner wuss. but also, yeah, all the Silent Hills are good. And I think there's one other, but I'll just chime in later.
Yeah.
I think for me, the big one would definitely be Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Just the fact that it's open world and that everything's AI-driven really, really changes things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, at any time the monsters can decide, you know, they don't like being wherever they are and, you know, go just, you know, start raiding wherever you're at.
Right.
It's also just, you know, has really creepy atmosphere. I feel like that's a game that I don't know. More people should play. I wish more survival horror games would kind of take some of the things it did. But
right.
Great game. Alan Wake's great. I got it for a PC. I've kind of been getting ready to play it, by which I mean I've been replacing every light bulb in my house.
Yeah, Alan Wake is real good. Gary's doing a Let's Play of that on the Watch Out for Fireballs channel right now. And yeah, that is the way to go.
I think Doom 3 was another one that I started in high school, but I was never able to finish. I think I made it 10 or 15 minutes into it.
Yeah, Doom 3 is also really good. That it gets shuffled aside because it's a Doom game. But yeah, it is very frightening as well. Dennis, have you had a chance to go? I forget.
Just some of the I'd say Penumbra up front. Some of the iOS games. I'm trying to think like way back in the day, because I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, horror games from 10 years ago that we could drudge up. But nothing's coming to mind.
Yeah.
So I'll stick with the iOS games as a good example.
You could go with Illbleed. You could go with Blue Stinger. Obscure.
Eternal Darkness.
Oh, yep. Sorry.
just go play in bathrooms.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's fun times.
Yeah, Clock Tower. Haunting Ground. Yeah, Haunting Ground actually is a legit recommendation. That is not jokey like these other ones that I've been making.
Cole, I think Chris is trying to nerd snipe you here.
What do you mean?
Good thing you're not in the middle of the street.
I'm looking at the fucking list right now. So yeah. But no, Haunting Ground is really good, especially if you like the whole amnesia, you know, defenseless, you know, being pursued kind of thing.
What's there was a game for Oculus Rift that is coming out that's like from a toddler's perspective.
Oh, you know what? That's it's not Sweet Home, because that's one of these things. I actually batched that. That looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that looked really, really cool.
Yeah. I back these games on Kickstarter and then I forget that they exist. I'll pull it up here. But
I
yeah,
have to remind you
that is something that, Among the Sleep is what you're referring to. That's the nice thing about these, you know, indie games and stuff. A lot more horror stuff happening in that space. So
yeah.
Call of Cthulhu Dark Corners of the Earth.
Oh, that is a scary game. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to close the list here before I give the entire thing away. So,
I still could never get over how incredibly stupid your character was in Call of Cthulhu.
Ah, yeah.
Plot blindness.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be a game.
True.
Are we ready to button it up?
Sure.
The credit. And that was level 27. Kind of a intended to be a punctuated episode, but then ended up not being, but hey, discussion is fun.
What else is new?
What else is new? Oh man, we even took out the brief. Oh well. So I'm going to keep the admin section short. If you like the show, go to duckfeed.tv, find other episodes, like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/levelpodcast. iTunes ratings, reviews, blah blah blah. All of that is good. If you would like to support the show financially, there's duckfeed.tv/tipjar. Use the Amazon link, and that gives us a little kickback. Like, we have some people who are just like religiously doing that, and I can't tell you how integral that is to us being able to run this venture not at a loss. So, you know, it costs, you know, hundreds of dollars a month to do this, and you guys cover all of it mostly. So that is really cool. You know, not to lift the kimono too much, but it ends up working out. So, is there anything that I'm missing aside from the Twitter plugs, guys?
Tell a friend.
Yes, tell friends, please. Please tell friends.
Assuming
and also,
you have those.
Well, let's not browbeat them. yes.
Tell your enemies as well.
Yeah. And, you know, if you want to write us letters or whatever, I think the other podcasts do that. The contact form is duckfeed.tv/contact. Pick the level from that, and then we can gather those up and maybe, I don't know, do something with them. But we like talking about things you have us talk about just as much as we like talking with you about things you talk about. I don't know. So,
what do you want us to be, baby?
Oh, no. Okay. So with that, I'm Cole Ross. It's at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
And don't be afraid.
On Twitter.
And thank you for listening, and don't be afraid. There we go.
Sure, no problem. I'm actually using a different mic than I normally do, so that's probably what it is.
I was going to say push it up 50%. I want it louder.
Yes.
Wait, no, that's not right. Is that better?
Yes, it is. It is a little bit better.
I can go farther.
I'm boosting the gain here.